You feel that way?
Testing.
Oh,
is it on?
Yeah, there you go.
Hello? If we can get everybody's attention, we'll get started. Louder? Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay. If we can get everybody's attention, we will get started. August 8th, 2019. We'll begin with some introductions. We have some new REC members and some not new REC members. We'll start down at the end. Rebecca?
I'm Rebecca Jones, and I represent non-consumptive users.
Jeff Taniguchi, brand new, representing sportsmen.
Thank you. Jeff was not.
Miles Hamburg, I'm the regional supervisor, the new regional supervisor replacing Boyd Blackwell. So this will be the first RAC meeting that I'll be representing the division in this capacity.
I'm Dick Bess. I'm brand new. I'm representing the Ag.
I'm Dan Abeda. I'm representing the Ashley National Forest.
Natasha Haddon, representing BLM.
I'm Mike Smith. I'm brand new, representing
non-approval of the agenda for this evening, which I would be happy to take motions.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the agenda as it's presented in front of us.
A motion from Dan Abeda.
I'll second that motion.
Second from Natasha. All in favor? All in favor? We printed out some minutes of our last chance to look at them, or if you need a minute, we can do that, and then I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting. Motion was made by Rebecca.
I'll go ahead and second that motion.
Seconded by Dan. All in favor?
Is that working or what?
It's unanimous. I would like to take just a moment to thank Randy Dearth for his time and effort as our chair, and we really appreciate the. With that, we'll move on to the Wildlife Board update from Miles.
So on the agenda, this list is the board chair, or the RAC chair, but Brett being the new chair wasn't at the RAC, at the board meeting. Randy may can jump in here if you see something different than what I'm going to talk about, but...
I missed my first task. It's a nice way to say it.
So there were two main agendas items that came through the RACs and to the board last May for the RAC or the board meeting. The first one was the wild turkey transplant list, identified the sites where we'd be augmenting and starting new populations in the state at the wildlife boarding meeting that passed unanimously. The second was the reptile and amphibian importation possession rule, R657-53, that basically allowed for and defined how people can possess and capture reptiles and amphibians in the state. So that also passed unanimously at the board meeting. At the board meeting, we had three board members, the terms that expired. Kirk Woodward was our Northeast Region representative on the Wildlife Board that left, and of course now Randy Dearth has been selected for that position. Wade Heaton was selected for the Southern Region board member, and Brett Selman for the Northeast Region. The board nominated and approved Byron Bateman. Was worth mentioning at this point is there will be the RAC and board training on August 21st in Farmington at the Eccles Wildlife Center. That'll be for all board and RAC members to attend for that training on August 21st. So if you're able to make it, that will be a good, valuable training for the RAC members, and there's option for some reimbursement of your mileage and per diem as well. So anyhow, if you have any questions on that, get with me or Rose, and we can work with you on those kinds of reimbursements. There'll be an agenda, I think, coming out before the meeting starts. So I think that's about it from the board update. Randy, do you have anything else you'd add to that?
Okay, thank you. We'll move forward into the regional update.
So got a lot to update. It's been a busy summer, a productive summer for us. In our wildlife section, they're currently wrapping up a lot of our pronghorn classification and our rabbit counts. So that's also going on. We've just finished submitting to our Salt Lake office our bighorn sheep and mountain goat unit plans. Those will be at the RAC meeting in September for your review. There have been quite a few bear and cougar incidents this summer. Just recently, I don't know how many of you saw or heard about the bear in Vernal last week. It was wandering around. So that bear's left the area now. Last week we also had a cougar and another bear over in the Tabiona area. So despite the adequate moisture and precipitation this year and the good conditions, bears still give us a little bit of trouble, but nothing too serious, but we've been able to work through those situations. Another thing that's been really interesting is our sensitive species biologist has been doing some mist netting for bats this summer, and he actually captured two spotted bats. They are a sensitive species, and it's the first time anyone's caught one of those spotted bats in the Northeast region in 20 years of effort. So it's pretty neat from that standpoint to be able to document those officially in the region. The other thing that's going on is next week, starting on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we'll be conducting some surveys in the Book Cliffs to get a better handle on the numbers of stray horses out there, and that's part of a Book Cliff working group that we're working through. I think Brett will update the group a little bit on that in just a minute. Is that right? Or I can.
Go ahead.
So the Book Cliff working group, that's been started as a result of seeing very poor body condition on a lot of our does as they enter the winter. We've had low doe-fawn ratios in the Book Cliffs, low pregnancy rates, low cow-calf rates in the Book Cliffs, and this spurred this Book Cliff working group to begin to look at some of the factors that may be influencing those populations out there. One of the things we're looking at, by having poor body condition coming into the winter, indicates maybe we're having some issues on the summer range or range issues there. And so one of the things we're starting to look at is just how many demands do we have on the available vegetation that's out there. We've got a good handle on the number of cattle, the number of elk, the number of deer out there. Big variable is how many stray horses are out there. And so that's what we'll be taking forth this flight effort for, to get a better handle on that. Then we can kind of start to see where any issues may be with those populations. So the group continues to meet about every 2 or 3 months. We'll be meeting again in September, so it's hopefully we can come up with some good solutions to some of those issues out there and work through them. Our habitat section has been busy building and replacing guzzlers this summer. The total number of guzzlers this year will be about 22. Those are scattered throughout the region, so it's a big effort that's going forward. Had a number of vegetation projects that will be implemented this fall throughout the region. In our law enforcement section, our officer districts are all fully staffed and ready to go for the hunts. We're excited about that. The canine certification. So once he's completed that, we'll have an actual wildlife canine in the Northeast region to help us with some of our law enforcement efforts. So that's a neat thing. It's been really busy for our law enforcement section in dealing with AIS issues this year. And one of the reasons is Lake Powell so bad with quagga mussels that so many people are using that water body right now. They're not able to decontaminate all the boats as they leave, and so they have to be decontaminated later at various other places. So that's really increased our workload up here as well this year. In our outreach section, there was the Fishing with the Fox fishing contest this year. There was actually 156 total tag returns this year from fish. That's Moose Ponds, Greens Lake, and Red Fleet, Lower Stillwater. So that's pretty impressive, and get people out catching fish. This June, we completed the 31st year of the Josie Shoot. In the past, Carol had ran that, and after she passed away, the division decided to try to pick up that event, keep it going, keep that tradition going. So we had about 47 female shooters this year, so it's a good event to keep going. For those of you that are interested, there'll be a Monarch Butterfly Tagging event this weekend, this Saturday, at the Josie's Cabin and Dinosaur National Monument. For those of you who don't know, their monarch butterflies are actually being considered to be listed as threatened species, and their declines have had a sharp decline in their populations. So some of these tagging studies are intended to try to learn a little more about what that decline might be. So we have a number of outreach events coming up. There'll be a tiger muskie seminar. There'll be a Kokanee Salmon Viewing Day, the Youth Pheasant Hunt, the Youth Waterfowl Clinic, and Sandhill Crane Day. And these events will be from September to October. If you have any questions or more information, a lot of that can be found on our Facebook feed or our website, or you can talk to Tanya. She can give you the details on those. In our aquatic section, the Starvation Pier is now completed. It will be open from May to October. It's the first ADA-accessible fishing pier that we have in the Northeast region. So it's taking some time getting that in, but the public are catching fish off of it, so that's good. We're currently restocking Steinaker and Pelican Lake. If you want to know the numbers, you can look at our stocking reports. But bass and bluegill are going back into both of those, as well as trout and browns into Steinaker. We've had a good reproduction in pelican this first year already from fish we put in last fall. So hopefully those fisheries will be up and productive in the next year or two. And our cutthroat folks will be wrapping up some treatments up on Reeder Creek at the end of August for Colorado River cutthroat restoration efforts. So there's a lot going on. I think that gives you kind of an update of some of the major projects that we have going on in the region this year.
Thanks, Miles. We've had a couple of RAC members come in. I'll let them introduce themselves and who they represent.
I'm Julius Murray. I'm the Union Tribe Vice Manager. I'm sitting in for Jamie Reeve.
Thank you.
Joe Arnold, representing the public.
Thanks, Joe. Before we get into the presentation, I just want to talk about the process. The division personnel will make a presentation, and then the RAC will address questions to them. Then the public can ask questions if they still have them. And then the RAC will make comments, and then the public will make comments. But in order to make a comment, you need to fill out a card, and we'll call you up to the microphone. And so if you think you want to make a comment, you probably ought to fill out a card. They're out there on the table. And the topic and which item you want to comment on, and then we'll call you. We typically have 3-minute comment period, but I don't know that it's that strict, so we'll try to let you get your opinion across. Sound all right? Okay. Darren DeBlois is going to present both the topics on the bobcat. The first one is the fur bearer and bobcat harvest recommendations.
Wrong one. Sorry about that. I'm going to do it backwards today. Okay, I appreciate the opportunity to present our recommendations for this year. I'm going to begin with our bobcat and fur bearer recommendations. The bulk of this presentation is going to deal with our bobcat recommendations. That's a species that we have a plan for, and we collect a fair amount of data from our harvested animals each year, and then look at how those metrics compare to the plan. So First of all, there are three management criteria we use for bobcats, and typically bobcat populations in the state fluctuate. Bobcats are tied fairly closely to their prey species, and typically when rabbit numbers drop, we see a similar drop in bobcat numbers. So the plan is intended to detect those declines, to make adjustments to opportunity in order to take those declines into account, and then as numbers again just sort of naturally fluctuate back up, then the plan would be sensitive to increasing opportunity. So we have these three metrics. The first is the number of juveniles in the harvest. So again, every bobcat that's taken in the state has to be checked in to one of our offices, and we take biological data from all of those animals, and then we use that data to calculate these metrics. The target in the plan is that we maintain that the number of juveniles in the harvest between 42% and 56%. The objective here is to make sure that we've got production going on out there in the landscape, and that there's a lot of young cats being born. That would typically indicate a stable to growing population. So if the number's higher than 42 or even higher than 56%, that still indicates that we could offer the maximum opportunity for bobcats in the state. This graph shows how that data looks since 1999 through last year. The dashed red line is the lower bound of the target window. The green is the upper bound. The red line is really the critical one. If it drops below that, we'd want to look at the other two parameters and see what that means for populations. But you can see how that number fluctuates through time. The second management criteria is adult survival. And so this is statistical analysis of the number of adults that we see in the harvest, and then we calculate a percent survival number based on that. It's a chi-square analysis for those of you who are familiar with statistics. But the target range here is 65% to 72%. So again, we want to see high adult survival, similar to any other population we manage. If adult survival is relatively high, then you'd expect a stable or growing population. Here's the data for that metric. Same time period. Same thing with the dashed line. So red, we don't want to be, if we're below that, we need to perhaps look at some changes to management strategies. So last year we were below this. The year before we were right on the line. And then this year we saw a slight increase, but still below the management parameter. Third is the percent females in the harvest. So this is a little bit of a, in this case, we want that number to be lower than 45%, so between 41 and 45, but lower than 45. And that would indicate that enough females are making it from year to year and not showing up in the harvest to maintain or grow a population. So in this case, our lines are going to flip a little bit. But again, the same time period from 1999 through the present, we were right on that upper management objective. The red line this time is on the top. We don't want to be any higher than that. And this year we're over. So this is just all the data for the last 4 years put in a table. If it's red, it means it's outside of the management parameters in a way that would indicate the decreasing population. The plan is fairly clear about what we do in these when we do get outside of management parameters. If there's two of these metrics are outside of the parameters, we would look at reducing the total number of permits available per individual. Right now that's 6, and we additionally would look at shortening the season. What you can't see is the text on the bottom. If all three are out, in addition to those two adjustments, we would cap the total number of permits available in the state at 80% of last year's sales. So currently, a person could get 6 bobcat tags per individual. The season is fairly generous. It begins in mid to early November, runs through March. and there's no cap on total permits. So an individual can get six, but as many individuals can purchase six permits as they want to. So our recommendations are as follows. First of all, reduce the number of permits per individual from six to five. To reduce the season length on the front end, so we're recommending that the hunt start a week later next year than it did this year, and it would still run through the 1st of March. And then at the bottom, the cap on permits, so 80% of last year's sales would be 6,460 total bobcat permits available. So once those are sold, no one else can purchase a bobcat permit. Just quickly, I think we've mentioned most of these, but again, you know, bobcat trapping and hunting doesn't influence those fluctuations. Typically, those are just natural cycles that occur on the landscape, and so the plan here is just to be sensitive to a reduced population. We need to reduce opportunity a little bit. You're trying to make it smaller. Okay, so we're all right. Sorry, I'm old, and so when you do that, I just like totally lose my train of thought. No, we're good. The only thing I would add is that initially we're being kind of conservative in these reductions. So you know, we're just doing one permit per individual, 1 week, and the 80% is in the plan regardless of what happens. But if we still continue to see the parameters declining, we'd come back next year and perhaps look at further restrictions. But we'll keep an eye on that. So for the other fur-bearing species that we're responsible for, these are the season dates we're recommending for next year. These are the same season dates we've had for several years now, just adjusted for the calendar year. So no real changes here. That's it.
Okay, do we have any questions from the RAC?
Yeah. Darren? Has there been a decline in harvest for bobcats?
Yeah, last year we did see a decline. Yeah, and a lot of the trappers said it was partly due to access issues with the snow pack we had throughout the state, that they had a hard time getting out to their traditional sites. But the metrics also indicate a declining population, so it's probably a combination of both.
Recommendations for 1 year. This is a 1 year recommendation.
Bobcat we look at every year, yeah.
Any other questions from the RAC? Does the public have any questions? Okay. Comments from the RAC? And I do not have any cards from the public, so with that I would entertain a motion.
I motion to accept the recommendations for the bobcat and other fur bears as presented.
Natasha makes motion.
Make a motion to second that.
Dick seconds that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
It's unanimous. It passes. Thank you, Darren. You can move into the second topic, which is the cougar recommendations at this point.
All right. Now we'll hit the easy stuff. This is what I'll be presenting now are our mountain lion or cougar recommendations for the 2019 and 20 season. I wanted to quickly, especially for those of you who are new on the RAC, just kind of do a brief explanation of how we make decisions. The recommendations tonight are going to be based on the Utah Cougar Management Plan that was adopted by the board in 2015. And so that plan has parameters that our biologists look at in order to make these recommendations. The plan drives the recommendation, I guess, is the take home. But what is the plan and what does it say? First of all, the plan to the RAC, where we had multiple stakeholders participate, people who had an interest in cougars from various different user groups. That plan was a compromise plan to try and get everybody's voice heard and to come up with a plan goal. And so the board adopted that in 2015. The goal of the plan is to maintain a healthy cougar population within their current distribution while considering human safety, economic concerns, other wildlife species, and maintaining hunting traditions. And so we define a healthy cougar population as one with a reasonable proportion of older age animals, breeding females, healthy individuals in balance with their natural prey, and sufficient genetic variability. So that's an effort to try to avoid these geographically isolated populations. And this is how we try to work towards achieving these goals. These parameters came out of a lot of research that's been done in Utah, primarily by people like Mike Wolf, David Stoner, even one of our current biologists, Dustin Mitchell, looked at cougars on the Monroe and the Okers and came up with these parameters, and these are how these got into the plan. So the first thing we look at, the primary objective that we look at, is 3 years of data, and we want to see the females in the harvest be below 40% unless the unit's under predator management. I'll explain what that means in the next slide. Once we see where the population is in relation to that 40% objective, then we would look at the number of adults over 5 years old for the last 3 years. And this metric is to get at maintaining that older age class of animals out there on the landscape. And so the objective there is to be between 15 and 20%. We have three different strategies that we use to hunt cougars on the different units throughout the state. The first strategy is a limited entry opportunity. In this instance, the division would issue a certain number of permits for mountain lions, say 10, just as an example. Those go out on a public draw. If 10 people will draw those permits, they have the exclusive opportunity to hunt that unit that year during the season, similar to our big game hunting at limited entry units. If all those tags aren't filled and the season ends, then that's it, they're done for that year. The second strategy, I'm going to skip one down because this is sort of the opposite strategy, harvest objective. On these units, our biologists set a quota for those units. So if the quota was 10, anybody who wanted to purchase a harvest objective permit over the counter could do that. They could hunt that unit until either the quota was met or the season ended, whichever came first. And split units are a combination. They begin as limited entry units. Any of those limited entry tags that aren't filled at the end of the limited entry season would then become a quota for the unit. So say 8 people harvest on limited entry, there's 2 remaining. Then the quota becomes 2 for the remainder of the season. And if those are filled, then the unit would close. Or if the season ends, whichever comes first. The final cougar hunting opportunity we have is a pursuit season, and this is available throughout these other seasons. A person can buy this permit. They can pursue lions. They can tree lions, but they can't kill anything at the end. This is a non-kill opportunity. On some units in the state, we have concerns about prey base for lions. Similar to mule deer, lions are dependent on their prey in order to maintain their population numbers. If we had a mule deer herd that was overextending their natural habitat, we would have a similar reaction as we do with lions. So if we have concerns about natural prey species, we would look at perhaps implementing a predator management plan. And this is an effort to reduce the total number, the density of lions within a unit in order to benefit that prey base that they rely on. So the two species of concern would be mule deer and bighorn sheep. For different reasons, bighorn sheep tend to be in small groups and relatively low population densities throughout the state. One or two mountain lions that key in on those species can do quite a bit of damage to a bighorn sheep population in a short amount of time. And for mule deer, we look at where they are with in relation to their management population objective and some other parameters like adult survival to determine if predation may be a factor in preventing that population from growing. So if any of those conditions are met, we may implement a predator management plan. These are three-year plans, and then they're evaluated in the third year to determine if the plan is working or if we're seeing a benefit to the species that we are concerned about. A couple of data slides. In this slide, this shows from 2004 to 2018. The orange line is our mule deer population estimate in the state during that time. There's two y-axes here. So mule deer's on the right, adult cougars on the left, and the years along the x-axis. The red line is a minimum population estimate of cougars between or 2 years old and older. So the way we calculate this is we back into it from our harvest data. So every lion that's taken in the state has to be checked by us. We pull a tooth to determine the age of those animals. And so say we had a lion last year that was 5 years old that came in and was checked. We assume that the year before it was alive and it was 4 years old. We add that to all the four-year-olds that were harvested the year before and so forth, and just kind of back calculate through the years. That gives you a minimum, absolute. That's just based totally on what we see, and so we know that we don't kill all the lions in the state every year. But the valuable thing in this is the trend. The trend won't change regardless of where natural mortality might be on the line. So that's a long explanation, but the take-home here is, I just want to be careful about how people interpret these numbers. The take-home is that it looks like when we grow mule deer, we grow mountain lions. And we've seen an increase in mountain lion populations over the last 5 to 10 years. This is harvest and total mortality that we see. The blue line is hunter harvest, so these are the numbers of mountain lions that have been harvested in the state since 2009, so for the last decade. That's the blue line. The orange line is any additional mortality that we're aware of. This would include wildlife services take for depredation, you know, where animals are taking livestock and they go out and take an animal. Roadkill, lions that get turned in by someone that found it in the field during a hunting season, those kinds of things. It remains fairly consistent through time. It's, you know, the percentage above what harvest is fairly consistent. This is the red portion of this graph are the number of males that have been taken, the proportion of males that have been taken over time since 1990. The lower part, the yellow part or orange part, are the number of female lions. And what we're looking at here is at 40% is what the statewide objective is for females in the harvest. And this just shows kind of where we've been over time with that metric. So moving on to recommendations. First of all, I'm going to do things a little bit differently this year, and I hope that this makes it easier to understand and make a decision. We're going to present unit recommendations based on how they fall into categories based on the plan. And I'll explain it as we start to see these slides. We overall are recommending an increase in permits or quotas by 34 total statewide. We're also recommending that we go, similar to what we did with black bears, to a three-year recommendation cycle. I'll explain why we think that would be a good strategy. And then finally, we have two proposed rule changes that we'll talk about, we'll recommend. So this is normally what we've done in the past is we go region by region, we show all the units. What I'm doing here is this first category. These are units in the state that have predator management plans in place, either for big corn sheep or for mule deer. And they're meeting, if they have predator management plans, we should be keeping the harvest of the percent of females in the harvest at 40% or greater. So these units are all meeting that parameter. You can see the permit recommendations in 2018, and then what we're recommending this year, and then the hunt type is the strategy that we talked about before. So HO would be harvest objective. Split is self-explanatory. And if they're limited entry, it'll be LE. And then finally, on the right-hand side is what the plan prescribes when these criteria are met. So if a unit is under predator management and the percent females in the harvest is above 40%, the plan says we should maintain the number of permits on that unit. And that's what we're doing for all of these units. We are recommending changing the Ogden from a split season to a harvest objective season. This next category are the number... These are units that don't have predator management plans in place, that don't qualify at the moment. So in this case, the management objective would be less than 40% females in the harvest. These are all exceeding that management objective. The prescription in the plan is that you decrease permits if these criteria are met. If you're above 40% females and you're not under predator management, you should reduce permits. And so that's what we're recommending on these three units. This next category, these are units that are under predator management, but in this case, they're below 40% females in the harvest. So the objective here would to try to get the percent females above 40%, because we're trying to reduce lion densities on these units to address concerns we have with either mule deer or bighorn sheep. And so the options in the plan are to maintain the number of permits or increase the number of permits. Except for the Buckcliffs East on this slide, we're recommending increases. We can talk more about Buckcliffs, but that hunt strategy actually was changed last year and we didn't fill the quota. So we're gonna keep it where it is until we can get to that. These are the same. This is the same category, just additional units. So, for most of these, we're not recommending a change. But on the Aviniquin Wildcat, we're recommending an additional 10 permits. And actually, I forgot on Zion, we're recommending 3 more. I just forgot to turn it yellow. So that would be a change as well. The next category. So these are not under predator management. So we're managing for below 40% females in the harvest on these units. There are two units here that are sort of new. Chalk Creek and Camas has been a combined unit up until now. So those two units could be hunted simultaneously. We had a real spike in depredation on that Chalk Creek unit last year. And so what we'd like to do is split those units, change the strategy on Chalk Creek, And we're recommending 15 permits there and 5 on Camas. The others, they meet their percent female objective, so they're below 40, but they're also below the adults, 5 years and older, so they should be between 15 and 20, and these are all below that. So the options in the plan for the biologist is to either maintain the number of permits or decrease the number of permits. And so we're recommending a decrease on the Plateau Fish Lake. You'll start to see a pattern here, I hope. So these units are all meeting their female age objectives, and they're right in the slot on their 15 to 20% 5 years and older over the last 3 years. And so in this instance, it's the biologist's discretion how they want to adjust permits. So we're recommending on the Central Mountains, Southwest Manti, reducing the permit numbers from 18 to 15 and changing the strategy to limited entry, and an increase of one permit on the Pine Valley South. These units are meeting their female objective and exceeding the age objective, increase the number of permits. And you can see in yellow the changes there. We have several units in the state where mountain lion harvest is so low that we don't get a valid sample size on the parameters. There's just too much variance, and so when that occurs, it's up to the district biologist's discretion what they want to do with recommendations. We are recommending an increase on the Beaver West. This was a new unit last year, from 3 to 6. The reason that we're doubling that, is that's the Mineral Mountains. If you remember, we talked about putting bighorn sheep out there. That transplant is imminent. So we're recommending the maximum increase that's allowed in the plan. You can never increase more than 100% in a year. So we're recommending the maximum increase there. The rest of these, most of them are not currently meeting their quota, so we're leaving them where they are. Finally, we have 4 units in the state identified in the plan where the primary ungulate prey species is bighorn sheep. And I mentioned before, you know, one lion getting into a bighorn sheep herd can do a lot of damage and actually jeopardize the success of that population of bighorns. These are also units with very low or no mule deer numbers, and also very low or virtually no mountain lions. And so what I've done here, we have an unlimited strategy on these units. That means the season doesn't close, and anybody that wants to buy a harvest objective permit can hunt these units all year. But that sounds fairly drastic, so I wanted to put the last 2 years of harvest up here just so the RAC can kind of see that those numbers are small. Some years, no lions, sometimes one. Parowitz kind of had a spike last year, but that's probably a good thing for those sheep, that, you know, if they were able to take 4 lions off of that unit, that's the objective. So this slide just kind of shows how things break out percentage-wise between quota strategy and some combination of limited entry or split. Three-year management cycle. We recommended this for black bears, and we'd like to recommend this for mountain lions as well. These populations change slowly, and so in some ways trying to adjust every year gets us into kind of this tail chasing exercise, which in and of itself wouldn't be that bad, except that with the way that we're calculating the population trend, additional harvest or additional opportunity throughout that 3-year period can actually give us a false signal and make it seem like a population's growing because we're killing more lions, but that's because we're increasing permits, and may not necessarily mean that the population is changing. And so biologically, it really makes more sense to kind of set permits, let that transpire for a set amount of time. We're recommending 3 years, and then make adjustments in the third year. We're already doing this for the predator management plans. They're 3-year cycles. We always are looking at 3 years of data for lions anyway. So this really does make a lot of sense. The caveat I want to throw in, though, is that we'll continue to look at these numbers, and if we see concerns with either prey populations or lion populations on a given unit, we would recommend changes and bring that back through the public cycle, or the public process, mid mid-cycle. So in year two, if we have some real concerns, have some event that really hurts herds, and we're concerned about, you know, lions suppressing a population, we may come back and make some recommendations for that particular unit or units, and take that through the public process. But the goal would be to set things and then maintain that. I'm similar to Black Bear. I anticipate we'd still come back for this meeting, give the racks updates, and let you know how things are going throughout that time period. It wouldn't be set it this year, and then you won't see us again for 3 years. So the season dates we're recommending are the same as last year, just adjusted for the calendar. So just set back to line up with that, the day of the week that those hunts open. Except for one change during harvest objective and unlimited seasons, we're recommending a closure on the La Salle and San Juan Mountains to dogs from September 14th through 22nd. The reason we're doing this is it currently is closed to hound hunting for bears, and it doesn't make sense to it can cause some confusion and some problems with law enforcement. If someone's running dogs, well, I'm just hunting lions. You're not supposed to be there with dogs for bears, so it just makes sense to make that consistent. Other than that, again, just adjusting for the calendar year. I want to take a minute and talk a little bit about livestock depredation and some of the trends we've seen there. So this is from 2001 through last year. The yellow line here represents the number of depredation incidences that were reported through Wildlife Services to us. And so an incident would be a producer finds a dead animal. They call Wildlife Services in to verify the cause of that mortality. If Wildlife Services determines that it was a cougar that killed the lamb or calf or whatever it happens to be, that would be classified as an incident. And so that's fairly consistent over time. So that's what we're measuring here, just how many of these calls have come in, how many of these animals are being detected, these livestock kills are being detected. It was really high in the early 2000s. Things dropped off a fair amount through the late 2000s. We saw a little bit of a spike in, the early 2000s. We saw a little bit of a spike in the, 2012, 2013. And then since 2015, we've seen quite an increase. This correlates with what we think we've seen in the population trend. We've seen more lions. And so it looks like it might be starting to, the rate of increase may be slowing down, but we're working really hard with producers to try and give them tools to address these concerns when they occur. Talk about that a little bit more in a minute. This is a similar graphic. This just shows the value of losses to mountain lions to producers over time. Bear in mind that the values of the animals, the livestock, changes. And so this is just what the division paid, what reported us and the values that we calculated based on cougar losses. So again, mainly just looking at trend over time. It's very similar to the incidences, but I think in today's dollars, if you want to try to adjust that, some of those spikes in the early 2000s would have been a little higher. Producers have some options. We're trying to work with the wool growers and Farm Bureau and some of the other groups to make producers aware of these. First of all, if a mountain lion is chasing, harassing, you catch it in the herd, or you find a dead animal, you have a 72-hour removal period to try to capture and kill that lion. And so most of the time this is in concert with Wildlife Services. They'll call Wildlife Services out, and Wildlife Services will be the one who's actively trying to catch and remove the lion, but it's not limited to that. A producer can do that on their own as well. Secondly, if a producer is having chronic depredation year after year, they're losing livestock, we can issue depredation permits to that producer. Typically, those are limited in time and space. So the idea here is to get permits in the producer's hand, let them take care of lions that have been causing damage. And sometimes, you know, at times of the year when the sheep aren't on the mountain yet. I mentioned Wildlife Services assistance. They're always available to do that. And finally, we compensate producers for all of the confirmed losses from a budget that we have to do that. We've actually raised the amount of money in that budget. We had to prorate 3 years ago and year before last. We've increased that budget. We didn't prorate anything this year. That just means that the money runs out, then producers only get paid a certain amount on the dollar because we have to pay everybody, and we can't pay more than the budget allows. So, again, that's been $180,000. It's been increased to $300,000. This year we were slightly over $200,000 in damages that we paid, and that's less than it has been the year before. The year before was about $250,000, and the year before that is about $280,000. So that's just confirmed losses. Finally, a couple of rule changes. The first, we'd like to recommend that we change the legal weapons that can be used to take a lion to mirror the big game rule. We made some changes in big game to the archery equipment requirements. If you remember, the poundage change, and there were some different restrictions on arrows. We also, for big game, allowed these air bows to be used. So this is a pneumatic gun that shoots an arrow, basically. So anyway, the idea here is that a legal weapon ought to be legal for all these large animals, and they're adequate to produce the effect intended. So we'll just make sure that's consistent. Finally, we're recommending that when people check in their mountain lion, they provide us with the exact location where that lion was killed. We want to start building a database of these locations, and we hope that over time that'll help us help inform our decisions on perhaps hunting strategies or unit boundaries. If we see a concentration of harvest, we may actually want to try to split those units up and spread hunters out across the landscape, for example. So we're asking to require that location be provided. Now a couple of gee whiz things. We'll end, well, I guess it depends on who you are. We'll end on a high note. But first of all, we've been working with USU and the National Wildlife Research Center on a cougar study. We just started this winter, and so the jury's out on a lot of this stuff, but a couple of neat things that we've seen already. So we started catching lions in December. And so we're, you know, just barely 7 months into this. But one thing that we've seen a couple of these animals make pretty significant movements. And so if you can see, you'll see it when it moves. But up there, see where Bear Lake is up on the Idaho border? There's a little brown cougar on the east side, that kind of squiggle. Was there? This is near. I'm not... savvy enough. There we go. Perfect. Yeah, that's it. So I'll just play this. It kind of speaks for itself. So we caught her in December. She moved immediately over the hill to Blacksmith Fort Canyon, just below Hardware Ranch, and spent the winter there. She was actually recollared. Her collar wasn't working quite right. So we caught her again, and as soon as we did, she took off. And she hit I-80. She crossed at Echo. She went into the high Uintas and decided that was not where she wanted to be. Turned around, and as of July 10th, you guys have a new cougar in your region. So, you know, over 180 miles. We had another one off the Book Cliffs that went all the way out to almost Craig, Colorado. But she turned around. She liked Utah so much. She came right back. And she's still moving, right? So... We have 13 on the air on the cache, the Manti, and the Book Cliffs. and two of the 13 did this kind of thing. And so we've known for a long time there's a lot of connectivity between these populations, that we have these transient animals, but typically those are young males, and females don't do that. So this is gee whiz. I mean, it's one animal, well, two animals. You can't extrapolate a lot from that, but it's pretty neat. One of the things we're doing, we're interested in prey sites and interactions between animals at prey sites. And so we're getting a location on these mountain lions every 2 hours. Some of you may have seen this already. We've had it on our Instagram. But when we detect a cougar is clustering up, kind of spending some time in one particular area, the grad student will go out and investigate that, or one of her techs. And if there's still a carcass there that could provide another meal, she'll set up a camera and we'll watch to see what's going on. We're really interested to see particularly interactions between coyotes. And this one, this is on the Book Cliff, so this is a local one. So this is just after 2 o'clock in the morning. She comes back. All that leaf litter in front is covering up a mule deer that she's killed. So she comes in, and the researcher says she kind of brushed on those limbs, and she's convinced that that cat could smell her and was not too keen about hanging out. So she, we'll see what she does with the. So she hooks on and drags it off camera, which is a real bummer because we wanted to see what was going to go on. But the next night at 9:40, a bear shows up. He's, I don't know if it's a male or female. I keep saying he, but looks like a male. Checking things out, he can kind of smell that animal's there. And being the helpful bear he is, he brings it back in front of the camera. He knew he was out of focus, I guess. So this now is at midnight, so he spent a couple hours messing around with that and eating on it. And then he kind of drags it in the background. But then, get there, like clockwork.
There you are.
This cat comes back, again, just right after 2 o'clock in the morning. So it's just like she's almost making the rounds each day. And, vigilance is high, similar to what it was the night before. But she's like, wait a minute, that's not where I left that thing. 30 minutes later, look who's back. So we didn't, if there was any interaction between these two, like face-to-face, it was off camera. But this is the kind of thing, this is one lion and one bear, but it's the kind of thing we're interested in looking at. And, if a bear steals a lion's kill, what does that mean? Does a lion then have to make more frequent kills in order to maintain themselves or not? So that's the question. This is just one example of what we'll be looking at, but it's kind of neat. That's it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Commissioner Horrocks who went in. Welcome.
Thank you.
I have one question, and I'll start off the questions from the rack. Harvest objective tags, you can move between units and hunt the whole year with one tag statewide?
If you purchase a harvest objective permit, you can hunt any open harvest objective unit, right? So once the unit closes, it closes to everybody, but a person can hunt throughout the state on those units.
Okay. And then in general, I know there's a lot of units, mm-hmm. but what is the success on harvest objective? Are most of them meeting their objective?
It's a little higher than limited entry. Statewide, I think it's like 67% as long as kind of the average success.
Are hitting their objective and closing?
Right, yeah. So, but, some of those units where they're difficult to hunt are part of that calculation. So a lot of units fill their quotas, but there are enough that don't, that overall it averages out to about 67% success.
Other questions from the rack? Dan?
Yeah, Darren. Can you go back to the slide that showed
hunter harvest, I think, numbers versus other, I guess, mortality.
Yeah.
It was fairly early on in the presentation. It kind of surprised me a little bit.
That one, right?
Yeah, I think that's the one. So, hunter take lope being lower than total mortality.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, that's 10 years worth of data there.
Right.
Or so. Is what do you attribute the bulk of the other, like the total mortality?
Probably most of that through time has been Wildlife Services removal. We've had some additional take when we issued depredation tags to landowners recently. That's a rule that changed, I think, in 2015. It might actually have been a little bit later than that.
Okay.
But most of it's that. But then there's other things. You know, roadkill is part of that. But is basically any animal that we're aware, that we are made aware of, that died as other than as one in a hunt. So,
oh,
mostly Wildlife Service.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
Earlier on in your slide, one of your bullets had for the criteria, genetic variability. How are you confirming that?
We have been taking genetic material from the study animals. In the past, we've collected hair as well. But one of the indicators that you've got good genetics is that exchange. And so it's really good to see lions making those big movements. So from time to time, when we check them in, we'll collect DNA and have that tested.
And are all of your units open to pursuit seasons?
Yes.
Do you see that as educating the cats for
some
the?
Some people would say that. Some people swear that happens. Yeah.
That's all I got.
So with the increased snowfall that we had this year and precipitation, what's your best guess on mortality, or is it going to be down this because of the high snowpack?
Lions typically aren't hindered. In fact, deep snow is an advantage to these ambush predators because it slows down those prey animals. And so the collared lions we had throughout the winter ate a lot of adult elk, a lot more than I would have guessed on some of these units. And so I think if anything, it probably helps to have deep snow for these critters rather than the teeth are a good example. You just don't see those stress years, you know, with a deer. When they hit winter, they really get a really hard discernible ring in their enamel or in their dentine when we slice the tooth and age them, similar to a tree. And for predators, that's less of a, it's more of a, you can still do it, but you got to look a little harder because they just don't get stressed like ungulates do.
Makes sense.
Two questions. Your Aviniquin Wildcat unit, did it reach harvest objective numbers last year?
You guys know? You know? Let me look. Or was that a shake of the head? No, it didn't. Okay.
I interpret that as I don't know.
Sorry about that. And then another question, you talk about a three-year plan. If that was put in place, would that begin?
Right, that's what we're proposing. So this year we'd set these numbers, and then the objective would be to leave them in place for 3 years and then look at them. Three.
Thank you.
Maybe the split season, exactly what the criteria and how you understand that. Like if it's when it goes to harvest objective, how is that like how does the houndsman or somebody that's pursuing these animals find out about when that quota is met or not met?
So for both harvest objective units that are just that and split units when they are harvest objective, a person has to check our hotline every day. They can check our website or call in, and we'll let them know whether the unit's open or not. One thing we're working towards, and part of the reason we're recommending that people provide us with locations is going to electronic format that is real time. So when a person kills a lion, they would begin the check-in process on the mountain and then upload that data. We do sometimes have people that are kind of on the mountain, and we go over by one or two animals. Sometimes it doesn't ever seem to occur on one unit year after year. That is kind of a weakness of the system.
All the questions from the rack. We'll entertain questions from the public, and remember on your comments, I'll call you by name. Please state your name.
Troy Justinson, Sportsman, Fish and Wildlife. In the past, this unit has been a harvest objective. Last year, you switched to a split. And previous to that, we were always hitting an objective.
Right.
Can you give any explanation to why that is?
Clint probably knows better than I do, but you certainly don't have the numbers of people hunting early in the season when conditions are probably the best. You know, that doesn't open to harvest objective until the end of February. And so, you know, whatever you know, Clint, but that'd be my guess, that it's just people just aren't out there during prime hunting time.
And we had a lot of talk about the Book Cliffs Committee that's doing a lot of different things. There's another study going on out there with fawn survival. Can you give this room any update? There's a lot of interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah, I think I've got a slide. Actually, Clint might actually be more up to date than I am because I'm not totally in that world. I do have some of the cause-specific mortality. I'm going to make Clint get up. Might be able to help.
Can you look up that email, Dan, or Aaron?
Clint Sampson, wildlife biologist. I do have an update from the grad students. Sorry, I had all the cougar stuff pulled up. But currently we've caught 48 deer fawns this last spring, summer. I think 9 of them have died.
Clint, this is just adults, so sorry, but if that helps, good. If it doesn't,
Just give me 1 second here. But yeah, I think we've lost 9 fawns. I'm sorry. Okay, so it was 7 fawns have died due to lion predation, and then 5 fawns have died due to bear predation, and we've lost out of the 22 elk calves. We lost one calf to a bear, and then 2 calves to lions, and then we also lost 1 fawn to a bobcat, and 1 died of starvation, and then there was a couple in there that we couldn't quite tell. But on the flip side of that, the 5 female lions that we have in the Book Cliffs during that whole fawning calving season, on average, 1 cat would kill 2 elk calves a week, is what we were finding with just those 5 study animals.
That's been fairly consistent across the other units too. Once those newborn calves and fawns hit the ground, lions really keyed in on them. So this probably doesn't help, Troy, but this is last year's adult cause-specific stuff out on the Book Cliffs. So the Book Cliffs is at the bottom there. Lion predation is the yellow portion of that graph. This is just number of deaths by cause. And so you can see there's a fairly big chunk on the Book Cliffs attributable to lions. But there's a lot going on out there, too, so with bears and some other things.
Thank you. Is there any other questions from the public? Please step up.
Hello, my name's Josh Horrocks, and I'm on the Cougar Advisory Board. I have a question about the rule to the GPS and the cougars where you kill them. As of now, we have to tell you the drainage that we killed them in. When we set up the 10-year plan, 2 of the things that came up with wanting to GPS them is the Pope and Young Club and the Boone and Crockett Club allowing you to put your animals in those record book categories if you used a GPS on your hunt. And then a second reason was a lot of hunters don't have a GPS. Is the DWR going to supply GPSs? So my question is, has the Pope and Young Club and the Boone and Crockett Club changed their rules on in your animals?
Yeah, I shouldn't have put books. GPS on the slide. That's actually not actually what the rule. The rule actually says to provide the location. So you wouldn't need necessarily, you could show us on a map. But we want to know, you know, within reason, you know, where that animal came from. So, you know, most guys that run dogs have got GPS collars on them, and we figured that wouldn't be too much to ask. But again, you wouldn't necessarily have to have a GPS unit to gather that point. You could do that right now manually on a map, and the objective down the road would be to have an app on your phone that would collect that, so it wouldn't be the phone would collect the point, but you wouldn't be using it to navigate. So
okay, if that's all the questions, we'll move to the public comments, then we'll have some board comments, and then we can possibly proceed to a vote. Heidi, would you like to start?
My name is Heidi Heckathorn, and I'm here for the Mule Deer Foundation, and I think they thought you were changing the book list, so they wanted me here to let you know that they are in support of Harvest Objective on lions, because historically, split units and limited entry aren't as successful in their percentage of lion kills. And in the book lists, with the low pregnancy rate and the doe to fawn ratio being so low in the book lists, that they would really like a harvest objective out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you clarify that, Darren? The book lists rattlesnake is currently harvest objective. The East is...
That was changed board last year.
And it is currently what, the East?
Currently
split.
So that book list East is split. Right. Yeah. It had been Harvest Objective. It got changed through the public process last year. And so it became a split unit.
Okay.
We left the split.
All right. So Mule Deer Foundation is recommending that we go back to that Harvest Objective strategy.
Troy, would you like to?
We voted on that as a rack.
Go a minute.
They overturned it.
Would you like to comment? I have a card from you, or did?
Troy Justinson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. Technology's changing rapidly, even in the hunter's world, as far as trail cameras or whatever. I mean, we have these advances that make us more efficient as hunters, but it's now neat to see that on the wildlife side of things, as far as conservation, that we see those same changes. Being able to participate out there on the book lists and the fawn and calf survival rates and that was real interesting. Much like Darren showed with that cougar going all through the lions, it was interesting to see the bears and the lions that they have collared go right to where the fawning grounds are. And it was also interesting to see that the majority of the fawns were taken by bears and lions, when the perception in the past has always been the coyote. So it's we're learning a lot of things that's going to change the way that we manage wildlife, and what was once maybe a theory or a thought, now we have facts to base it. Based upon that, we support the division's recommendation with a few changes, one of which would be the cash. They've been at 25. The division's recommendation is to go down to 23. In the last 4 years, our fawn survival rate on that unit's been around 27%. We would ask that this rack vote with, like, the rack last night and northern rack to leave that at last year's numbers of 25. The other one that we'd like to address would be the Manti West. The division's proposal is to lower that from 18 to 15 and go limited entry. We'd like to stay at last year's numbers of 18 permits and leave it a split. And dealing with the Manti East is another interesting one. Is the Manti East has, it's similar to the book list. There ain't no deer. But of those deer, it has the lowest adult survival rate, but yet they're in the best shape, which tells us it's not a habitat problem. It tells us it's a predator problem. So the division's recommendation, I believe, is 22 permits. We'd like to bump that to 26 permits. And then the other one we'd like to bring up as well is that of the Beaver West. Our hopes are is to have Desert Bighorns reintroduced to that range. Darren had suggested that the plan only allows for 100% increase, so they wanted to go from 3 to 6. We'd actually like to bump that to 9. We're going to ask the board for a variance just for the simple fact. In order to reestablish these sheep, it's important that we really bring down the predator. So we'd ask the RAC to support there. So we appreciate that. Appreciate the new RAC members here for being able to willing and to serve and donate your time here. So thank you. Other than that, we support the division's recommendations.
Troy, on that unit, it's recommended 3 to 6. What are you recommending?
9. And then also, I failed to mention, too, as far as what the Mule Deer Foundation recommended, bringing the Bookless East back to a harvest objective, we'd support that as well.
Thank you. Josh?
Chairman Previdel, members of the RAC, I'm here to talk to you as a sportsman, an outfitter, and a member of the Cougar Advisory Group that the DNR put together. We met monthly for a long period of time to set up the 10-year Cougar plan, you know. And there's for good reason why we wanted the Book Cliffs unit to be a harvest objective unit for mountain lions, mostly due to the sink-source relationship that the Book Cliffs unit portrays in its area. Last year, the board, due to public input, pushed to put it to a split unit. And by doing that, they decreased the take of mountain lions by 10 mountain lions. When it was harvest objective, the biologists met their quota of 29 mountain lions. They took it to a split last year. They only got 19 on a good snow year. And if you know about cougar hunting, when the snow's good, mountain lion hunting's really good, and it couldn't get much better than last year. Our deer population in the Book Cliffs is close to 10,000 deer below objective. Our elk population in the Book Cliffs is close to 1,000 elk below objective. I am hoping that you guys will consider making a movement to put the Book Cliffs unit back to harvest objective so we can help our biologists fulfill the quota that they would like to have and do what's best for our wildlife.
Thank you. JC, would you like to speak next?
JC Brewer. I kind of feel like I'm beginning to sound like a broken record. For 4 years in a row now, I've been before this microphone trying to get the division to control the number of predators that we have in the Book Cliffs until we get this deer herd back up somewhere near objective. This gentleman just spoke, said that we are, and I think he's about right, close to 10,000 deer under objective in the Book Cliffs. And I want to draw your attention to that chart right there. Look at the Book Cliffs unit and see what is the primary killer of our deer. Mountain lions. Yet, we cannot get the number of mountain lion permits or take out there increased any in my pleading with you for 4 years. What's it going to take to get this group, these folks, you people here, to recommend go back to a harvest objective and increase the number of cougar permits until we get some kind of a results on that deer herd out there? You're just using the deer herd for a prey base for your cougars, and you won't address the cougar population. Come on. What's it going to take?
Thank you. Rod Smith.
I'm Rodney Smith, representing the Utah Houndsman Association. as of right now. I probably have a target on the back right now. So, anyways, I enjoy hunting, you know, hunting out in lines, and I enjoy chasing. So, I don't want to make love to it. I don't know. I don't know how much closer I can get without being uncomfortable. Not a good picture for me. So we're asking for, we also have worked diligently with the state and Darren. We have a lot of good board members that came on our board. We appreciate Darren's efforts and the state, and appreciate all the RAC members that are here tonight. With that being said, we do support, and we're kind of I'm looking forward to the GPS. You know, I think it makes houndsmen more honest as far as being on the mountain. And, you know, a lot of houndsmen do. I mean, if Hal Meekin can run a GPS, then anybody can run a GPS. So, but we're asking for, we do not support the two tag increase for the Southeast Manti. Also, we would like the Southwest Manti to stay a split rather than a limited entry. I handed out, I'm not going to go through and read everything, but I handed out information for everybody explaining why those units and how we feel about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Comments from the RAC? Commissioner Horrocks?
Mr. Chairman, didn't we voted, our RAC did last year, about splitting the Bookcliffs on a limited or on a harvest objective, didn't we? Our RAC, does anybody remember? What I recall is we did not support it going forward. You know, on that, if that's just clarification, if anybody can remember that, because I was thinking we voted it down last year, but it went to Salt Lake and got passed, if I'm not mistaken.
So when you say voted it down, you what I
harvest objective?
What I remember, you approved harvest objective,
yes,
and it went to the board.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's the correct. I believe we recommended harvest objective, and at Salt Lake, where the decision's made, we're making recommendations to the Wildlife Board as a RAC.
The DWR recommended harvest objective.
Yeah,
and
but
we
our
supported
our
it. At the RAC level, and then the Wildlife Board voted to make it our split season. That's how it happened last year. Thank you for clarifying that.
I just have a question. Clint, when the Bookcliffs East, was it harvest objective before previously? Or have they changed that just a little?
Yes. So we were harvest objective for 3 years. And I'm sure Darren can pull up that stuff too. But if you look back before that, we were a split unit. And we were finally, has been brought up earlier, I think starting to impact a little bit on the cougar population when we were harvest objective. When we went split, you know, it would have been nice to either shorten that front end of the limited entry season or to increase permits to still keep that harvest closer to 29.
So when it was harvest objective, they were meeting the
every
harvest.
Year.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
So wait a second. Hold on. So why is it recommended as a split this year, biologically?
The board changed our recommendation and made it a split, mm-hmm. and so we're living with that recommendation.
Okay. Biologically, harvest objective makes a lot of sense.
Right. When it was split before, it was between 2006 and, let's see, 2013. Only one of those years did we meet quota.
And if I remember, you warned us last year.
3 out of 4 of the years it was harvest objective.
If we went to split, right?
That quota. On the split.
Okay. Thanks. Well, you can sit down now, Clint.
Clint, I think, wasn't it 2 years ago that there was a recommendation to go to 38, and I think that was brought down. The houndsmen, there was some, you know, that they weren't seeing animals, so I think we listened to that a little bit, because I think the recommendation by the biologist was to go up with the cougar population, and we went, I think we stayed status, or we may have even come down. So now the increase sounds like it's, could we see the slide on the harvest of adults and the females, the parameters that you go by to keep that the specific, even?
With the recommendation, that slide, or just
just the general one that basically says your harvest and your adults, your percentage of adults, and why we're staying at 29. Because I do remember a few years ago that there was a 10 lion increase. I don't believe it passed. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a record of necessarily what we recommended and what it was changed to. But
that's correct.
I remember us trying to go to 38, and there was some chatter back and forth between the various groups of what was the best thing for the lions and the houndsmen and the deer population, trying to meet in the middle somewhere.
And I believe Joe, there was concern about, from the local houndsmen, about the harvest objective because of the crowding with all the roads in the Book Cliffs, and that was a comment that came out. They preferred the split, I believe.
Yes. So that's right at the 40% that you're... What about the amount of adults as well?
So in this case, since it's under a predator management plan, the objective is to manage for above 40% females in the harvest, and age doesn't enter into it. Doesn't matter what the age is. So the objective would be to get above that. The reason we didn't recommend a change this year to permits is because we didn't fill the quota last year, and we maintained that hunt strategy based on what the board did last year. And so that's all. And again, that percent females is over 3 years, so that's combining all the males and females that are harvested over the past 3 years.
And the harvest was 19 last year. Is that accurate?
But it was a split hunt rather than a objective quota.
Do we have any other comments from the board?
Yeah, I've got a comment. So we went to a split in 2018. Is that correct? And didn't earlier we talk about with cougar management, you kind of look at like 3 year. So, I mean, bouncing around, I mean, is it fair? I mean, does it make sense to go back to harvest objective, given that it was just a year ago we went to split? I mean, is it really following the plan?
I think it's within the RAC's prerogative to make recommendations to the board. This hasn't come up in any other RAC so far, and you're the last RAC to meet, but you're also the RAC that represents that unit. And so, again, it's your prerogative. We didn't change it. Typically, if the board makes a change, they don't want us to come back the next year and try to switch what they voted for the year before. But again, the RAC certainly can make any recommendation they want.
Can I speak to this just a little bit? I'm Dax Mangus. I'm
get
the
closer. I gotta get closer.
I talk loud though. I'm the wildlife program manager, and you know, for years now we've seen that deer population struggle in the Book Cliffs, as has the elk population. It hasn't grown like other elk populations in the state, and predation is a factor. It is not the only factor. We had a lot of deer in really poor condition. We've had low reproductive rates in elk. Some of this is range related, and we have a committee that's working on some of these issues and looking at, we've got some issues in the Book Cliffs, but predation is one of those issues. And to be honest, you know, we've tried to be pretty aggressive to reduce predators in order to address some of these situations, and we've pretty much got the door slammed in our face every time we've asked to try to get aggressive. And when we finally have started to get some of this harvest and to dip into females and to show that maybe we are making progress on reducing the cougar populations, you know, the recommendations have been reduced or our strategy has been changed, And so, you know, at this point, we're doing the study. We're trying to collect some data. There have been a lot of different theories thrown out about what's the best way to manage cougars and what, you know, what may or may not lead to increased predation rates. And so I think this year, biologically, you know, we have a lot of predation and we can harvest cougars out there, and I think it would be a good thing. But because we've been told no through the public process so many times in the last few years, we decided to just keep the recommendation as it had been and continue to collect the data through the cougar study that we're doing in the Book Cliffs and work through some of the habitat issues with this Book Cliffs committee to see if maybe we can come back again later with more information and make a better recommendation. But that's just kind of the context, and from my perspective, I guess I wanted to share that with you, that I don't think we would have an issue with the strategy being changed back to harvest objective. We're not concerned that we're going to, you know, completely wipe out the cougar population in the Book Cliffs. That's not a concern we have. But, you know, when we get told no over and over again through the public process, we kind of are just regrouping and trying to collect more information.
Thank you. And I guess my take on that, you have a tough job. You've got to answer to both boards and to the public. But we're trying to make decisions based on hopefully the biological situation. And so we can recommend, if we wish, I guess it's within the parameters, we could recommend whatever the RAC wished. Is there any other comments before we look into splitting this issue up, or any other comments from the RAC?
I just had a question about the Beaver West. Is it within our parameters to ask for a variance from the Cougar plan to increase that to 9 versus 6?
The board has the prerogative to go outside of the plan if they so wish. The division will manage to the plan in all instances. So
that's the Mineral Mountains we're talking about there. So I think in the past, if it's okay with the RAC, on these specific units, it's been more effective to discuss them and then pass the bulk of the plan unchanged. So if there's any recommendations on any of these units that have been discussed as far as deviating from the recommendation, I'm open to any motions. We can do several motions, you know, address the Manti units, the Mineral Mountains separately, and then we definitely ought to discuss the Book Cliffs and decide whether we have a recommendation or not.
Commissioner?
When you're ready, I'd like to make a motion.
Yes.
I'd like to make the motion that we accept the SFW's proposals on the units numbers and going to a split, going to a harvest objective in the Book Cliffs.
So you're recommending that let me clarify your motion, that on the cache, the Manti West, the Manti East, and the Mineral Mountains, which is the
where they're putting the new sheep herd,
the plan parameters, and Troy, was the recommendation harvest objective from Sportsman Fish Wildlife on the Book Cliffs? Okay. So we have a motion to accept the Sportsman's for Fish and Wildlife suggestions, which is 25 on the cache, 18 on the Manti West, 26 the Manti East, 9 on the Beaver, is that Beaver East?
West.
Beaver West, and to recommend harvest objective on the Book Cliffs East, remaining at 29 permits, I guess that would be. So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Can I ask a question before we?
Absolutely.
On the SFW recommended changes, how did those respective regions vote on those? So like Manti East and West, is that Southeast region?
Yeah, last night they approved. They went with 26 last night.
And then did you say up north on the cache, the northern region went so, with?
Yeah, I can go through that. So the northern region voted, and it had the chair had to break a tie, but they voted to keep the cache at 25 and not lower the permits. Let me go through the others. They voted to keep the Southwest Manti at a split unit, so not to change it to limited entry, but they maintained the reduction in permits. On the Southeast, no, they didn't pass that. Never mind. That was it, Northern Region. Central Region voted to keep the split strategy on the Southwest Manti with 15 permits instead of, so keep the reduction, but change the strategy, or not change the strategy. They voted, we didn't even talk about Stansbury, so don't worry about that, I guess. Keep the cash at 25. That vote actually failed in the Central Region. Sorry, I'm just reading my notes. The Manti didn't come up in the Southern Region at all. Southeastern Region voted to keep the, basically what Troy just presented, to keep Southwest Manti at 18 tags and a split, so not to change anything, and to raise the Southeast Manti to 26 permits instead of the 22 that we recommended, and that passed, and to keep cash at 25.
Was the hunt strategy on the Mantis discussed, similar to Rod's?
Yeah, so maybe in a nutshell, all the RACs except for the Southern Region, who didn't discuss the Manti at all, voted to keep that as a split unit. And then whether to raise or lower the, rather keep the tags or lower them was kind of a mixed bag between the two. And then the cash, the ones that voted on it, two out of three voted to keep it at 25, and one voted and it failed. So to go with our recommendation.
Okay.
That help?
So we have a motion on the table. We can modify that, or we can second that. If there is support for it, or I guess we could, if there was some minor recommendations that we could agree on, Commissioner Horitz could modify his motion if there was anything specific. No suggestions? Okay. Do we have a second on the motion on the table?
I'll second it.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor? So we've got one, two, three. This is on Commissioner Horrocks's motion, original motion. Will you raise your hands again, please? Four. Seven. Four. Those opposed?
One. Two.
Okay, motion passes 7-2. Okay, with that, I believe that was the final.
Did his motion just address?
Maybe he did hear me.
Oh, we need to address the rest of the plan. Excuse me. That's correct. So, with the exception of the ones we listed, which was the Manti, two Manti units, the Mineral Mountains, and the Book Cliffs, I would entertain a motion to approve the remainder of the packet as presented, or however you want to.
I'll make a motion to accept the rest of the presentation as presented, besides what we just voted on.
Okay. We have a motion to approve the remainder of the recommendation as presented. I have a second on that?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and second that.
I have a second. All in favor? One, two, three. 6-4, opposed. Okay.
I'll abstain.
I guess we have four abstains. We have actually three abstains and six. Is that what we want to be? Okay.
Rick, can you repeat what you just last said, please?
Okay, what I think happened.
Do you have the first motion?
Yes.
From Commissioner Horrocks. Natasha, don't let me put words in your mouth, but I believe the motion was to approve the remainder of the presentation.
We need the numbers.
Yes. Oh, there was six for and three abstained. Now we're good. Okay, is there anything else anybody wants to bring up or talk about before we adjourn? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
There it was. Commissioner Horrocks.
I second that emotion. Oh.
It was unanimous.
Yes.
I'm sure it was unanimous.
Hey, see. Tomorrow's nice to meet you.